And let's see. Okay, Zeke, Ezekiel Kralin wrote, "Funny how my Wi-Fi connection fizzled out shortly after I hung up, as if I were meant to focus on this email instead. I will download the podcast soon as it is available and listen to the rest of the show at my leisure." He's talking about last week when he called me at KNYO in Fort Bragg when I was there. I'm not there tonight. I'm doing the show by live remote from Juanita's apartment. So if you were thinking about going by there and you didn't hear me tell you earlier, I'm not in Fort Bragg tonight, so that's not going to work. Anyway, Zeke is talking about how he called on the phone, and I complained that I couldn't get the telephone call to sound good. We need to fix that telephone box, because sometimes it puts a harsh edge on a caller. It depends a little bit on what kind of a phone they're using, but it's something that should be able to be fixed, I think, probably an impedance mismatch, and putting a transformer in the circuit will just solve that, but I'm not there and I can't solve it now, maybe next week. Anyway, Zeke continues, "Some more thoughts welled up in my brain pan after speaking with you on the air. Yes, I am on a hero's quest, as Joseph Campbell called it. And I, like Mr. Campbell, am a disciple of that great philosopher and founder of compassionate therapy, Carl Jung. All my tales are rich in Jungian symbolism. Reading his concepts have been great therapy for me, and his theory of archetypes gave me profound understanding on how to heal my troubled soul. IOW, Carl Jung saved my sanity, and Joseph Campbell is the greatest teacher of Jung's revelations. I've listened passionately to many of his lectures as a thirsty man drinks from the waters of Avalon, and my quest to free Larkin from the chains of financial dependence on these rich bitches, I sought to bring in the moolah by publishing a book about our remarkable friendship, which book, as you likely surmise, is Free Me From This Bond. But that has yet to pan out. Nonetheless, Mr. Kelsey is my great muse who inspires me to write some of the most incredible tales, many of which are completely true, based on the scenarios he creates in my world. I believe he's telepathic and senses when I need to resume my writing. After a few weeks of my pen remaining idle in the inkwell, he will show up unexpectedly, put on a show that simply mesmerizes me, and voila, I'm off to the storytelling races once more. This latest piece, Hug of the Century, is a perfect example, but there are other excellent men in my life, all homeless, that are in my stories and will become more prominent in future accounts. Larkin, in fact, knows some of them as well. These extraordinary events in my life, with Mr. Kelsey at the helm, make a curious juxtaposition against this mundane backdrop we call day-to-day life. So many people running to and fro, unhappy with their lives on all levels, drinking or drugging their way into catatonic reality, while here I am, eager to share with them my own revelations, yet frustrated. Besoire cause I cannot. Besoire cause. But it certainly compels me to take pen to paper and bring them to the world another way. I do realize now that frustration is a necessary aspect of life's lessons that I must forge ahead regardless if I truly believe my ideas are that important. My self-published novel delves into my struggles to improve Mr. Kelsey's life and how I've come to conclude that these bitches are actually my teachers playing the role of evil stepsisters to my Cinderella, that I may become the hero in this extraordinary real-life adventure. So my motive to publish that opus was not just to aid Larkin financially, but to share my findings with the world. For if what I have surmised about life is true, my writings will be of immense benefit to others. I now carry a folded printout of an email I composed just yesterday that also concludes the story, which second half you will read aloud next Friday. That's now. He continues, "I carry it in my pocket for the next time I see Larkin, that he may read it himself. You will understand its import once you get to it. And is why I request that you do not exclude the addendum this time around, for it rounds off the tale beautifully. For this reason, after instead of calling it addendum, I've titled it Afterglow. A little birdie named Eleanor told me that you, she, and Mitch had a lovely soiree recently at their home. I'm sure there's the soiree again. But up above, it's stuck in the middle of a word. I wonder how that happened. I'm sure a most enjoyable time was had by all. Just wish I were there, too. Well, someday that will happen, soon, I hope. Happy show 1003, which is tonight, my 1003rd memo of the air show, all told. So, there is that. And I'm going to read you part two of Hug of the Century by Ezekiel J. Kralin, who writes, "Once he discarded the smoldering butt, he came up and grabbed my coat to pull me forward. He semi-dragged me from the shelter to the front gate of 2306. I resisted only slightly, all the while saying things like, 'I'm not your savior anymore, Zeke, hear me? I'm not your savior.' Once we got to the gate, he tried to make me promise I'd stay out of his life for once and for all. My reply? But Lark and I already am out of your life, and have been for at least 2 years. It's only when our paths cross that I say hi and speak kind words to you. Of course, it's always been him showing up in my life, often by whacking with a powerful karate kick the street sign below my window to alert me. Though, of course, he feigns otherwise, as if that were the only metallic signpost in the city. Nonetheless, I always poke my noggin out the window and holler, 'I heard that,' to which he usually never reacts, except for this latest episode when he halted to look up at my room and speak to me. Though, once in a while, he flips me the bird without looking back. And I bellow this or that nonsense, something playful such as, 'Is that a cock in your pocket, or are you going to shoot me?' Or, 'Help me, Larkin, I've made it mostly water,' or, 'I lost my mojo, sweetheart, have you seen it anywhere?' Silly stuff like that. But I've already reported all those events of our encounters in previous posts, that apparently he planned all this by his lonesome, while pawning it all off on me, being the brilliant jokester that he is. Then he held up a fist so I could bump it, as some sort of agreement that I'd do just that, remove myself from his world for good. But I don't do fist bumps, certainly not with one I love so much, for they strike me as an insult, because we should be hugging each other. Instead, I refuse to be demoted to just a trivial acquaintance, so I ignored the extended fist and remarked, 'We live in the same neighborhood, Larkin. Our paths will keep crossing.' He then lowered his fist, dropped his arms to his sides, stood up as tall as he could, and at 6'4", that's quite a length, and sighed, 'Hug me, please.' I looked at that glorious Celtic mug and said, 'Yes, I'd love to hug you, Larkin.' But he didn't put his arms out to encircle me, so I knew it would be a one-way hug. Fine with me, I raised myself up, wrapped my arms around those noble shoulders, and laid my head upon his chest. For about half a minute, I was in umpteenth heaven. My hug ended way too soon, but I respect him too much to force him to linger in my arms. A subtle way, I guess, to display my sincerest affection. So as soon as I regretfully withdrew, he resumed his rants about how screwed up I am, and I absolutely must banish my pathetic self from his kingdom. Meanwhile, I'm standing patiently by the front gate, Larkin obstructing my ability to step inside. So I interjected while he kept babbling away, 'If you move aside a skosh so I can insert this key into the lock, that would be awesome.' But he ignored me and rattled on while I happily remained in sweet proximity, wishing this to endure till the bovines return. Before I forget, zooflagellate reader, I left out some parts that I will now include, then complete the tale. Well, stating how miserable his life is, I told him mine is pretty bad, too. Then he mumbled something about leaving San Francisco, that people are so mean. 'They're mean to me, too, Larkin,' I agreed. 'It's a cruel city.' Then I added, 'If you move, Larkin, I will miss you so much,' which was an understatement. I'd probably fall flat on my face and die in a few months, or sooner after his departure. Until that fateful moment, I'll probably be looking for him everywhere I go, poking my head out the window several times each day, in hopes of seeing him come striding down Market Street, keeping my ears alert for his boisterous hollers through the chill night air, a glorious timbre like cathedral bells to my eardrums. I'd refuse to believe he's really gone, that he's just testing my mettle, which scenario I've already written down in my tale, but it won't make me happy. Upon which you, Eleanor, remarked, 'Inspired, it's as if you're channeling a parallel dream world which is striving to become the real world. The more detailed your vision, the more you create a portal for that dream world to find its way into this world and become as real as the rocks and trees. Marco read that piece, by the way, on April 18th, though he excluded the addendum and thus your comment therein. Now, during Larkin's chest-punching antics, he suddenly slammed the bus shelter's thermoplastic wall right behind my head. Gave me a start, but again, that was a normal reflex. It had nothing to do with fear. In fact, I was totally at peace, overjoyed even at the mischievous attentions he bestowed upon me last night. He knows I carry pepper spray all too well, as I actually sprayed him once that night I got him 86th from Twin Peaks Tavern 2 Christmas Eves ago, even though he insisted I place my hands in my pockets. I could have whipped it out to defend myself from his blows, or grabbing onto my jacket and pulling me to the front gate, but this was an act of trust on both our parts, and quite probably a test of my emotional status, to see whether or not I allowed any fear or hatred to seep into my psyche during these little challenges. He did look deep into my eyes several times, I guess to discern any negative content. During one of his rants against me, he strode back and forth along the length of the shelter, waving his arms and cussing me out with some of the most colorful language I've ever heard, like that foul-mouthed cockatoo on YouTube. I interrupted him at this point in a steady, though bemused, tone of voice. "You really want me out of your life? Then why are you still here? Why didn't you just dismiss me and keep on trucking?" I swept my hands, palms up, toward Noe Street, as if to nudge him on his way, express delivery. Larkin scowled. I swear I could see fumes wafting from those darling Irish ears. At least 4 times he must have repeated that I should not intrude myself into his life anymore, and upon the 2nd or 4th time I spoke the following observation. How can I promise not to do something that I've never done in the first place? He almost blew up at that, playing the enraged daddy to his disobedient brat of a son to a T. I had come up with a new pet title for him, Captain Galaxy. Finally had the chance to use it last night, and one of those moments he turned to head for parts unknown, I called out, "Captain Galaxy!" He acted quite annoyed, which caused him to turn heel and come back, but he bumped into a gaggle of bargoers while screaming expletives at me at the same time. He stopped abruptly and gave them a profuse apology. They laughed. "Oh, it's okay. You have a good night, sir." While catching his breath, I took that moment to express the remainder of my rehearsed bon mot. "Oh, Captain Galaxy, you have made my world so wonderful. I can't thank you enough." Well, that really ticked him off, so he decided to linger and rage at me a while longer, much to my delicious elation. After our one-way hug, I watched him depart while holding the gate half open. Almost at the corner, he turned and called to me. "So we're good now. You stay out of my life. Promise?" I spoke no word, just smiled at my demented Diplodocus with immense gratitude, wondering if he's going to come back for one more drama queen bout, but he did not. And instead of shutting the gate and returning upstairs to my SRO, I decided to follow him from a safe distance after he turned left up Noe Street, headed for, I don't know how to pronounce this, D-U-B-O-C-E Park? Dubose Park? I heard his voice boom at someone from around the corner, or maybe he was just exclaiming his usual nonsense to the invisible spirits of the air. I waited until the sonorous echoes diminished a bit before turning that corner and proceeding in such a way that the parked cars would hide my view from his eagled vision should he turn to look back. Judging by his nonstop public ranting, like some comical werewolf or rhinoceros in heat, he must have been almost 2 blocks ahead. After traversing almost another block and a half, he suddenly ceased, and I trembled at the thought that he spotted me or suspected my whereabouts and was about to run back to give me a quasi-thrashing, but that did not occur, to my relief. Figuring he was still not so far gone that he couldn't hear me if I yelled, I decided to do just that, though I hesitated. Now, what words can I say to be sure he'd know it was my voice calling out and no one else's? I thought in desperation, fearing he may be too distant already. Then it hit me. Use Mr. Ed voice. Bituminous reader, the Mr. Ed voice, by the way, is something Larkin came up with back in 2007 as a subtle acknowledgment that he had read a tale I delivered to him via the post, which story, The Exalted Land of Andor, included a humorous reference to Mr. Ed. So I neighed like an old horse, echoing dramatically through the crisp night air like hollering down a canyon, the famous moniker from that old sitcom, Wilmer! Did Larkin respond? Yes, he did, and with not a hint of note of anger, just pure exhilaration. Urgh. 5 seconds later, I did it again. Wilmer! And once more, he responded. Urgh. Elated that I found some way to cap our latest episode with a sterling finale, I turned about and marched home. Some reflections on last night's adventure. After Larkin smashed the signpost and I called out, I heard that. He paused below my window to look up and call back. He's never done that before. He's always just walked on by without paying any attention. I'm glad he looked up to my windows to see the new curtains and the elegant lamp now resting on the sill. For a couple of years back, he visited me in my abode and remarked on the crummy condition of my habitat out of concern for my health. I wanted him to see that I finally begun overhauling the SRO, and that the lamp in the window symbolizes my burning ardor for he who is the glorious flame of my own puzzled life. Assuming he's telepathic, he knew I wanted badly to see him, even though I convinced myself to be satisfied with glimpsing him 2 times that night. But he wanted to surprise me by showing up in person, putting on an amazing and hilarious show. I suspect he planned this days in advance. It's like he writes these scripts for me, then acts them out, and that has been true now for more than 11 years and many, many adventures. I also suspect that he knew I was standing outside all along, and that his thinking I was stationed at the window was just part of the act. His calling out to me with a friendly, "Urgh!" in response to my, "Wilmer!" was his sweet way of assuring me that our friendship is solid and his appreciation and love quite true. I swear on a stack of gay Bibles, Ellie, if angels do exist, Larkin is the perfect vision of one, and how he creates these incredible scenarios, as if he prepared them all ahead of time, only grants validity to my heavenly conjecture. If nothing else, Larkin is closer to any angel I could ever imagine, which makes me an incredibly lucky fellow. Interesting side note, on Friday night, just 2 days before our latest encounter, I was listening to Marco McLean's radio show via KNYO's streaming webpage. Fortunately, my Wi-Fi connection picked up again after wimping out on me for almost 3 weeks. Since he usually reads my tales later in the show, I tend to doze off and either miss my piece entirely or suddenly wake up when he states my name. This time around, I had nodded off just before the reading, but heard my name. Still half asleep, I sensed someone else in the room lying down on a cot. It was Larkin, enjoying my company and listening to Marco. For your information, there is no cot in my room. That was part of the dream, nor any Larkin, of course, inflated or real. So when I finally awoke in full a few moments later, I felt refreshed and comforted by the presence of Larkin's ghost and Marco's intelligent voice coming through the speakers. Vexatious reader, other than correcting any typos and possibly changing or rearranging a few words here and there, I'm not going to improve upon this story to make it more eloquent. This, out of humility for the amazing spirit that is Larkin Kelsey, a most talented, beautiful, exuberant, witty, brave and rare specimen of a man. My own writings pale in comparison to the unbelievable adventures he concocts in real-life 3D. Considerable credit must go to Larkin for such inspiration. I can't wait to see how things ensue these next few days and weeks. His amazing antics of last night give every indication that he has many more tricks up his sleeve of a rewarding nature, finally as opposed to a decade of tribulations. I have every expectation they may start as soon as later today. I feel like a kid in a candy store, or perhaps most succulently, like a dragon in a monastery. Afterglow. I did nothing else on the internet today except to write down my latest Larkin tale. Once completed, I packed things up and departed from Uncle Benny's Donuts and Bagels, located in San Francisco's second largest Chinese community, and decided at first to skip my usual stopover at a nearby Goodwill thrift store on my way to the N. Judah. But a little birdie told me, "No, Zeke, you must go to Goodwill. There's something very special for you to celebrate last night's grace-filled encounter. You will recognize the item that's intended just for you. There'll be no doubt once you lay peepers on it." So off I sped to Goodwill, 3 blocks west, as I've done each and every day so far since I've made Uncle Benny's my afternoon hangout. I strolled to the back of the store in the far left corner where all the electronic devices are and other interesting gewgaws, and there it was, shining like a beacon. It's a stained glass objet d'art, real glass and lead. In other words, not a plastic knockoff. Kind of big, too. Diameter of, 14 inches or thereabout. And that it depicts the Hindu symbol for peace, Om Shanti, makes it very special indeed. Best of all, guess what it cost? $2.99. FYI, I believe that this little bird who told me to go to Goodwill this afternoon was Larkin's telepathy, as I believe it has been in other previous and amazing episodes since we first met in 2006. And after that, in the story, is the image of some text, which is an email to Twin Peaks Tavern from the same Zeke Kralin who wrote the story I just read to you. And it reads, I hope this email goes to the right person. You remember about 2.5 years ago I posted a complaint about Larkin's abusive behavior toward me at your bar? You did the right thing by 86ing him. However, much time has passed, and I don't believe in punishing someone beyond what's fair. He is actually an incredible person, very good friend to me. He just sometimes likes to play a little rough, which is okay by me, except when the locale is inappropriate. He has protected me from real violence several times in the 10-plus years we've known each other. Rather than bore you with further details about our unique relationship, I make the following request: that you welcome him back at Twin Peaks Tavern. I know he sorely misses the good friendships he made there. He even called your tavern my little corner of the Castro. I'm hoping you will remove the no Larkin rule now and give the dude another chance. Most of the time, he is an incredible asset to any place he hangs out. Please know that he has neither asked me nor intimidated me into contacting you. I'm doing this by my own free will. Most sincerely, and happy Gay Pride Week. Signed, Ezekiel J. Kralin. So, there's that.